This is an Animal Planet podcast. Check out Discovery Network's complete podcast lineup at DiscoveryChannelRadio.com.
Meet the Zorbo family of Long Island, New York. Charlie Zorbo works in pharmaceutical sales, but right now he's unemployed. His wife, Vita, runs a fitness center for women. Their 10-year-old son, Nikki, is a soccer star. 14-year-old Joey is obsessed with video games. The Zorbos would love to plan a getaway, but these days it's tough. They just never seem to have the time. And with Charlie out of work, money's tight. But all that stress is about to melt away.
Rocky Mountains. Cool?
Yeah. Colorado, here we come.
The Zorbos are about to get out there on a wild animal adventure. The trip will be a great escape from the everyday grind. From their Long Island home, the Zorbos head west, roughly 3,000 miles, deep into the wilderness of northern Colorado. Rocky Mountain National Park is a land of extremes. More than 400 square miles of lush forests, barren alpine tundra, and mountain peaks that tower over 14,000 feet. Over 60 kinds of mammals live here, from coyotes to elk, bighorn sheep to mountain lions. There are also 280 species of birds and nearly a dozen different types of fish. For Nikki and Joey, this is their first experience in the real Wild West, where everything is supersized. Case in point, the Continental Divide, the line that decides whether runoff water ends up in the Atlantic or the Pacific, runs smack through the park. Rocky Mountain is like the backbone of the country.
Welcome to Rocky Mountain National Park.
Park Ranger Kyle Patterson opens a map of possibilities for the Zorbos.
You might see elk, bighorn sheep, moose, owls,
mountain lions,
falcons, mule deer.
Wow.
And
that's
so you'll
cool.
have to be listening for coyotes at night. And then that's one of the neat things about national parks. They're not zoos, so you just never know when or where you're going to see wildlife.
Exactly.
A quick check-in at the lodge, but there's no time to unpack. The Zorbos are already due at moose school to learn about one of the park's most impressive and dangerous residents. But before they even get there, they get distracted by something big. It just happens to be the subject of today's lesson.
Here he is, he's getting up.
He's moving.
What's hanging from his chin?
Seeing a wild bull moose right off the bat is almost too good to be true. They're so swept up in the excitement, they can't help but creep in for a closer look.
You think he's going to come this way?
He's giving us a show.
What the Zorbos don't know is just how risky it is to be this close.
How close are we, do you think? 50 feet?
Not that far.
They may look laid back, but these animals won't hesitate to charge. They're absolutely huge, standing up to 7 feet tall and tipping the scales at 1,600 pounds. Few animals in North America are as dangerous as a mother moose protecting her young. A direct hit from Mama Moose is like getting run over by the family sedan. Fortunately, the Zorbos have found a male, and he doesn't seem to feel threatened.
Oh, yeah. This was worth it. This is
what we like to see. We want to be out here with
them. And it's spectacular. It really is. It's just...
That's amazing.
You can't explain it, being here.
The Zorbos got a sneak peek at a moose, but they still need to go to moose school. The principal is Park Ranger Barb King. She's been working at Rocky Mountain National Park for 14 years, and moose are her passion.
So moose grow antlers. A lot of people call them horns.
Let me help you.
Barb begins with the basics, but soon she'll make it crystal clear why it's crazy to get on the bad side of a moose. Moose are the largest members of the deer family. Only the males, called bulls, have these massive antlers, which can weigh up to 75 pounds and stretch 8 feet across. So it's no wonder they attract female moose attention. Females see them as billboards advertising charm, good health, and power. Qualities the bulls hope will convince females to mate with them. Historically, moose used to just pass through this part of Colorado. But now, there's a group of about 65 living here year-round.
We're going to go look for moose, but I want to make sure, because when you see the real thing, you won't have that urge to get close, okay?
Ranger Barb once had her own run-in with some of these bulky beasts.
And I stepped off the trail, and I looked up, and it's like, cool, a moose! And this is before you saw moose every day. And then I heard more galloping, and it's like, oh, two moose! And the last thing I remember is looking up this nostril of Mom, because her nostril was flaring. She reared up on her hind legs. She was snorting and bellowing. What would you do?
Back away.
Ran.
You ran?
Unfortunately, there was one of those big rocks in the forest, and I was able to get up there, and I don't even remember doing it. And Mom came and slammed her head right at the base of the rock. So raise your right hands and tell me, when I see the moose, I will not mess with the moose.
When I will not mess with the moose.
Not mess with the moose.
Moose may appear slow and awkward, but when they want to, they can move at a surprising 30 miles an hour. If that happens, the best thing to do is to run and hide behind something big and sturdy. The Zorbos will keep a safer distance. Now they know how close they came to disaster. Armed with knowledge, the Zorbos head back into Moose Country. It's a crisp, clear fall afternoon in Rocky Mountain National Park. Perfect moose watching weather. Ranger Barb leads the Zorbos to a meadow on the west side of the park in the Kawanichi Valley. There, just beyond the tall grass, is a female and her calf.
Hi, Moose. The Zorbos are here.
The moose don't seem to care about their audience. They have pretty bad eyesight, but a fantastic sense of smell. Chances are this pair caught wind of the Zorbos long before the Zorbos saw them.
So one eyeball's looking at us.
Yep, she's got one eye on us. This time of year, too, they're really fascinated by any water sounds.
A watery sound just might be a bull nearby urinating. It may not be everyone's idea of romance, but to cow moose during the mating season, it's the sound and smell of a love connection. Moose happen to have other ways of letting each other know they're interested.
They call it the hiccup sound, but it's more like they curl up their lip. They'll walk around kind of going...
You
can hardly hear it. You have to be real close. Vocalizations are very low frequency.
They're such giants, it's no wonder that moose are awesome eating machines. These vegetarians can pack away up to 60 pounds of greens a day. That's a lot of roughage. Good thing they have four stomachs to help them digest. Multiple stomachs mean moose can have one major pig out and spend the rest of the day relaxing while their stomachs go to work. Ranger Barb keeps the Zorbos at least 100 yards from the moose. At this distance, they generally don't mind unexpected visitors.
Watch the ears.
Right here.
She's
right.
Listening. See how those ears are tilted forward? Oh, just went back. That's not a good sign. Also, if they start licking their muzzle, tongue, and if they cock their head and then lay back their ears, you better move slowly.
It's only day one, and the Zorbos have already had their first great adventure. But the day isn't over. On the way back to the lodge, the Zorbos get one last thrill.
I think they're right here.
I see them. I hear them.
See this slope right here? That rock?
There's a pack of coyotes out there yipping it up in the meadow. Coyotes often travel in packs of up to six or seven. They're headed by a dominant male and female that pair up for several years, sometimes even for life. In a coyote pack, everyone pitches in raising the pups.
It was unbelievable.
Amazing.
It was like 100 dogs all barking at once.
Coyotes don't howl for just any old reason. Their calls have meaning, and it changes from season to season. In winter, males howl to claim territory and attract mates. On early fall days like this, the howls come from females calling out to their pups and from pups responding in chorus. Mostly, they're scavengers, but when they need to, they'll stalk prey for up to a half hour before attacking in an all-out sprint that can peak at 40 miles an hour. With light fading fast, the pack begins to move, and the Zorbos catch their first real glimpse.
Wow! That is awesome!
Just like this howl, they all started at once. That was so cool. And we even got to see them a little bit, too, which is pretty cool.
Early the next morning, Vita and Joey Zorbo head out on their own for a mother-son adventure in Rocky Mountain National Park. They'll spend the day with a team of biologists on a life-saving mission to track mule deer. Park biologist Mary Kay Watry is trying to save the deer from chronic wasting disease, a fatal brain illness that's decimating deer herds throughout Colorado and Wyoming. So far, 18 of the park's deer have tested positive for the disease. At 8 a.m., it's easy to find the deer who are out for their morning graze. The deer that are marked have already been tested for the disease. They're part of a 5-year study to test at least half of the adult population. About 500 mule deer roam the park. They're good swimmers and runners, reaching speeds up to 35 miles per hour. But they're still popular prey for coyotes and mountain lions. They know they're on the menu, so they're very skittish and spook easily. Ranger Scott Ratchford joins Mary Kay to sedate the unmarked buck. Ranger J.P. Farrar keeps Vita and Joey at a safe distance.
You kind of need 360 vision. You got to watch the trees above you and the sticks below you. And I think we can actually start heading up this rise.
They're
here.
Oh, is that them?
Wow. There, he's looking at us.
Look at him.
Okay, the one that just joined him is marked. The one on the far left is our target.
I can't believe we're tracking a mule deer.
Sneaking up on such a jumpy animal is no easy feat. Ranger Scott has to fake the deer out by pretending he's not interested. He needs to get in close to make sure he gets a clean shot with his dart gun.
The deer quite often get real skittish and they get scared that you are a predator when you're staring at them. So quite often when we're stalking them, we'll just kind of mosey along and try and look away from them and sidestep over toward them so that they're not too concerned about us, and that way we can get in close and hopefully get a shot.
After pursuing these guys for a couple hours, we were finally able to dart the one that wasn't marked, and right now he's recumbent, which means he's gone down.
Once the deer is darted, it takes about 15 minutes for the drug to take effect. Now, Vita and Joey get in on the action.
We consider ourselves pretty lucky. I was talking to the park ranger. Sometimes they go 8 hours without even catching one.
While Vita and Joey get to work, Charlie and Nikki set off for Black Canyon Creek on the park's east side to search for one of the deer's top predators.
Hey, the Zorbos, right?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you, Don.
I'm Caroline.
Hi.
Don Hunter and Caroline Crum are doing something that no one's ever done before. These researchers are trying to track the mountain lion population in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Mountain lions are called by many different names. In Colorado, it seems like the majority of the people here call it the mountain lion. It's also known as the puma. In other areas of the United States, other names come up. You'll hear cougar, catamount, the Florida panther, or just panther. So there's several names for the mountain lion.
Whatever name you use, this is one of the toughest animals to study anywhere. They're so elusive that it's almost impossible to even see one, let alone get any information on their hunting, diet, or health. Researchers would be happy just to get a good estimate of how many big cats are in the park. Now, they're hoping some high-tech tools will give them some answers.
Hey, guys, come on over here. I'm going to show you where we have our bait site set up and give you some idea of how you attract a mountain lion to come to where you want it to come.
The researchers have tied the hind quarter of a mule deer to a tree. The carcass is from a deer killed on the highway. Their hope is that a cat will drop by later for a midnight snack.
A lot of the good meat, so that when the lion comes, it's got several meals there.
If a cat takes the bait, then the researchers will move the meat inside the cage the following night. Hopefully, the mountain lion will return and be enticed into the trap. And if free food isn't tempting enough, the researchers have another trick.
You know what that is? One of these guys. A baby deer.
It's a baby. Good job. That's right.
Baby deer.
It's a baby deer. We're trying to take advantage of sound, because we're trying to lure our cats, because we know that they travel in this area, but we're wanting to come right here. And one of the ways that we do that to help bring them to this bait is to make a sound like a distressed animal. We had this cage especially designed to be very, very safe. So I want to point out some things that we did to it. And one is to make it long enough so that a cat going in here, when the cage door drops, it's not going to get its tail cut. The cat always is never in here very long. There's a little antenna. Well, we have that antenna attached to the door, and we can tell the moment this door closes there's an animal here. So we can literally be here within a few minutes.
Don and Caroline set up cameras to record everything that happens. One camera is sensitive to motion. The other records infrared pictures, very handy since most activity goes on in the dark. If everything goes perfectly, they might just catch a big cat.
Miles away, the mule deer exam is going smoothly. While Joey checks its heart rate, the rangers take a tiny snip from the buck's tonsils. The tissue will be tested for chronic wasting disease.
Most of the deer population here is not impacted with chronic wasting disease. We have, our last estimate is about 3.5% of the deer were CWD positive, chronic wasting disease positive, and that is actually lower in elk. So very few animals actually come back positive and need to be euthanized.
So far, there's been no proof that it can be transmitted to humans and that it has any danger for humans.
Once the deer is tested, he gets an ear tag, so rangers will know not to dart him again. The entire exam and tonsil biopsy takes less than 45 minutes.
Yes.
And as soon as they're done, they give the deer an antidote to reverse the effect of the tranquilizer.
What I saw was amazing, to be up and close with the park rangers and just, you know, seeing all the vital signs being taken and Joey getting an opportunity to hear the heartbeat is just wild.
Soon, the buck will realize the ground isn't actually moving. It's just his wobbly legs. Early the next morning, the entire Zorbo family joins mountain lion researchers Don Hunter and Caroline Crum. Everyone is anxious to find out if their bait attracted a visitor.
Pretty much looks like how we left it. Still all covered up. Nothing's been pulled away.
Looks like the clever cat wasn't fooled at all. It's a bit disappointing, but mornings like this are definitely the norm. Don and Caroline have only caught 3 cats inside the park in the past 2 years. It only gives them more respect for the animal.
It's so fascinating to study mountain lions because they're such a charismatic animal. People don't see them very often, so it's really a treasure to get to see one. And to actually be able to touch one and study one is really amazing.
As technology improves, rangers will be able to use multiple cameras to identify and monitor the lion population without having to trap them. That's good news for an animal that would prefer to stay far away from people. And the cameras already prove one thing. There are definitely lions stalking the dark forests of Rocky Mountain.
We know that the mountain lions are out there. It's one of the things that makes the experience of being in the park kind of exciting.
And dangerous if the mountain lion sees you as prey.
The majority of the attacks have been smaller people or children. So if you're hiking through the forest and you know you're going to be in mountain lion country, you'd want to keep an eye on the smaller kids, keep them closer to you. And if you are one of those rare people who are attacked, then the suggestion is that you fight back. Make yourself look as big as possible. Back away, get out of here, hit some sticks together.
This is a bit too much talk about getting eaten. How about a less dangerous animal, one that's a known vegetarian? This is more like it, majestic bighorn sheep. But as the Zorbos find out, they're another one of the park's more elusive residents. Bighorn are an iconic symbol of the Rockies. 2 million used to roam the tundra and ridgelines of America's western mountains, but they were nearly wiped out by hunters in the 19th century. Today, roughly 400 bighorn call Rocky Mountain home. In a wilderness this vast, that's not many. Luckily, biologist Bruce Wunder knows just where to look. He's got his finger on the pulse of the park and can find virtually any animal in it. He leads the Zorbos to the best place to spot sheep. And it's not exactly where you'd expect. But there, nibbling grass on the side of the road, is a young bighorn ram. Just a few feet away is a ewe, a female, perched on the rocks. Both animals are totally oblivious to slowing traffic and the commotion they're causing.
That's a ewe. He's on the girl, right? He's on the ewe. He's got the short ones.
Look how they climb.
Imagine if you could do that.
Bighorns aren't picky. They'll eat just about any grass or shrub they find. But they seem to have a special fondness for roadside dining, and it isn't because they like posing for pictures.
With all the cars driving by, it changes the nutrient content of the plants along the edge of the road. So they're down there exploiting some of those additional nutrients that they aren't able to get up in some of the rest of the habitat where they're found.
Roads catch rain and snowfall, and the runoff contains extra salt and calcium, which get absorbed by plants. The sheep have figured this out and hit the roadside when they want an extra dose of minerals. Bighorns also get most of their water from the plants they eat, meaning they can hang out in their high-altitude haven for days at a time, far from people and predators. But when winter moves in, they head down into the valleys, where they make do with hay and twigs.
We're so happy that we finally got to see these
beautiful animals.
Bighorns are a park treasure, and an especially fragile one. After nearly being hunted to extinction, the remaining herds were hit hard by a pneumonia epidemic in the early 1990s. Now, they're fighting for their lives. To find out more about the plight of these amazing animals, the Zorbos meet up with graduate student Katie Driscoll.
This is an example of the hoof. They're hard and they're fine. You want to take a look?
The hoof is made of keratin, similar to our fingernails. It's divided into two parts that can spread wide when a bighorn steps on a rock. It's like stepping with suction cups, making them incredibly steady on rugged terrain. Their distinctive horns are made of keratin, too. Unlike antlers, which are shed every year, horns grow with the sheep throughout its life.
So you can tell the age of a ram by the rings?
Yes, actually, you can estimate the age.
The ewe sheep have horns, too, but they're a lot smaller. Katie's trying to figure out why so many bighorn lambs aren't surviving. In the park, sheep population has dropped by half in the last 15 years. One of Katie's favorite research locations is called, appropriately, Sheep Rock. But she's not just looking for the actual animals. Her most valuable data comes from the droppings they leave behind.
As the sheep pass the pellets through their intestines, they slough epithelial cells. And the epithelial cells have their DNA. Try not to touch the samples because you don't want to get your own DNA on them. Here, you want your samples? Take that home as a souvenir.
Back in the lab, Katie will extract some DNA. She hopes to discover whether a disease is killing the sheep or whether inbreeding is the culprit. No matter where the Zorbos go in Rocky Mountain National Park, it seems they're always running into dozens of elk. One of the park's most popular residents. The frequent elk sightings are no coincidence. There are a lot of elk here. Roughly 3,000 wander anywhere they please. The reason for the large number is simple. Predators, or lack thereof. Their arch enemy, the wolf, is nowhere to be found in the park. And there aren't enough mountain lions to make a dent. And while these animals often turn up right next to the lodge, the real elk extravaganza can only be found in the backcountry.
Just climb on up.
The Zorbos trade in their car for horseback to give them a chance to get extra close. The idea is when elk look up to see the horses, they're more likely to think it's just a cousin. Joining the family on horseback is Ranger Kathy Brown, who's been studying elk for 20 years. The Zorbos head for prime elk real estate on the east side of the park between Hidden Valley and Bighorn Mountain.
Well, guys, we're lucky enough to be here in Horseshoe Park tonight. The big bull in there, he's 800 pounds of testosterone this time of year. He wants to either mate or fight.
It's early fall, which is peak rutting season, and the bulls are definitely on edge. No one wants to get in the path of a charging bull. Despite their size, speed is not a problem. Elk can run as fast as 35 miles an hour. That's about three times faster than most people.
When you see the bull throw his head back and lay his antlers down across his back, and then his chin comes up and this wonderful sound comes out of his mouth. It's half yodel, half roar. It's just a beautiful thing, and they call it a bugle. And he does that to announce his presence to other bulls, and he also does it to bond with the cows in his harem. It's his way of telling them that he's their guy.
Considering their massive build, the bull's high-pitched bugle seems, well, a little unfitting. But it sure does the trick, grabbing the attention of females and warning other bulls to back off. Only bulls grow antlers, and their growth is a prime example of nature's ebb and flow. In summer, antlers grow at least half an inch a day. By the fall, the rack is wide and wonderful. With the winter freeze, the antlers stop growing and break off, only to sprout anew when spring comes. In general, the bigger the rack, the larger the harem. And the larger the harem, the better the chance of fathering lots of new elk. But it isn't just size that matters, it's also skill. Young bull elk are squaring off to test their mettle. Elk can't see how big their antlers have grown. To find out if they've got a formidable enough weapon, bulls often stab at tree limbs and then survey the damage. The Zorbos Week in Rocky Mountain National Park is the journey of a lifetime. And the incredible adventure has whet their appetite for more. Even Joey and Nikki now know the wilderness packs a lot more punch than any of their video games. The moonrise over the mountains couldn't be a more perfect way to close out the Zorbos' final adventure.
I'd probably tell my classmates about the mule deer first, because that was, like, amazing.
I never thought that I, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, would be visiting the Colorado Rockies.
My favorite animal was the moose.
Every morning you wake up, you look at the view of the mountains and having the animals out there every day and having to go home. We will miss it, definitely. Got a lot of souvenirs to bring home, a lot of goodies that will always treasure this. So thank you.